Business Brief, the most widely read business magazine in South Africa, brings you the Business Brief interview of the week.
Welcome back to Contemporary Business, and it's time now for one of our regular Business Brief interviews. Business Brief, the number one online and in printed edition read magazine here in South Africa, business magazine. And there's no doubt why. It's because of the quality of the contributions made by the people who are published, the authors in the Business Brief magazine. Today we're talking to Pierre Berger, who's a director at Worksmen's Attorneys, and we're talking specifically about his article, which was entitled, Who Has to Register as a Credit Provider Under the National Credit Act? Pierre, thank you so much for joining me here on Contemporary Business.
It's a pleasure, Ivor. Thanks for having me.
Why did you write this article?
I thought it was it's a point of law which has recently been clarified by our Supreme Court of Appeal, which I think is necessary for anybody who's engaged in concluding a credit agreement to keep in mind, because the impact is so far-reaching and so profound that it's really not something that can be ignored.
It seems to me that there are so many requirements now for registering as a credit provider, even to the extent of shareholders who offer terms for repayment of loans or initial loans to buy shares, shareholders who offer terms for shareholders to exit shareholder agreements. All of these kinds of people need to be considered as credit providers and needing to register, it seems to me. Or is that reading that's too far?
I don't think that is reading it too far. Anybody who enters into a credit agreement as a credit provider will have to register as a credit provider or face the prospect that his or her agreement will be held to be void and hence unenforceable. And so I suppose the question that one has to concern oneself with is what constitutes a credit agreement? And the definition in the National Credit Act is a bit laborious, but to put it in very simple terms, anybody who enters into an agreement in terms of which repayment of a loaned amount or payment for goods and services is deferred, so that's point number one, the payment must be deferred, and point number two is in return for that deferment there is some charge applicable, such as interest, that agreement will constitute a credit agreement. And if it constitutes a credit agreement, then the provider of that credit is required to register or face the agreement being considered void if it ever becomes litigious.
Pierre, surely we need to start talking about unintended consequences and unanticipated consequences, because surely in framing these amendments to the Credit Act, these kinds of things were never intended to be the consequence?
Yes, Ivor, one finds it very difficult to contemplate that the legislature could genuinely have intended that, for example, a friendly loan between two old friends or associates or between family members, which loan is repayable in installments and where perhaps a small component of interest is added simply to cover the time value of money or to cover inflation, that loan, a once-off loan of that nature, could attract an obligation to register as a credit provider. One gets the impression that the legislature simply didn't think through all of those consequences.
Are there any provisions for exemption applications?
No. The obligation to register as a credit provider is an absolute one. If you enter into a credit agreement for any amount that's above the regulated threshold, then you have to register as a credit provider. And I might add at this point, Ivor, that the regulated threshold is zero. So any credit agreement attracts now the obligation to register as a credit provider.
All right. So while I'm trying to get my hearts pumping again, Pierre, let me ask you this. Let's look at the consequence of this requirement. So what is required to register as a credit provider under the National Credit Act?
Well, that information would be contained on the National Credit Regulator's website, but essentially it's filling in a bunch of forms and I assume as well paying some sort of administrative fee and then, of course, waiting for one's registration to go through.
So that's the question that I'm about to ask. This waiting for that registration, does that then forestall the ongoing nature of the transaction or the relationship?
Yes, one would have to be registered at the time that the credit agreement is entered into. Registering subsequently doesn't cure the position ex post facto. You have to actually be registered at the time, failing which your agreement will be void.
And are there any moves afoot to if you want, regulate this legislation to try and moderate it and mediate it to the extent that it becomes more reasonable?
No, and I'm frankly not sure what could be done about that either. The fact is that, as I wrote in my article, there was a 2015 case, the case of Friend versus Sendell, where the judiciary here in Gauteng engaged in a bit of creative judicial lawmaking, trying to moderate it, trying to moderate the requirement. And the judiciary came up with this idea that if you're not a participant in the credit industry, they didn't define that term, but obviously what they meant was a bank or some similar sort of financial institution. If you're not a participant in the credit industry, then you don't have to register. The Act doesn't apply to you. The problem with that, of course, is that it was wrong. The Act doesn't make any such exception or exemption. And so after wrestling with that for a couple of years, the Supreme Court, after the courts had wrestled with that for a couple of years, the Supreme Court of Appeal ultimately had no alternative but to overturn that finding, and the situation is now back to the legislative position.
I'm chatting with Pierre Berger, who's a director at Worksmen's Attorneys. Pierre, let's talk a little bit about the employment relationship and how this regulation actually affects employers who want to give loans which are repayable to their staff.
Well, again, if it's a loan, if it's repayable in installments, and if it attracts some sort of charge in return for the deferment, such as interest, then the obligation will be to register as a credit provider. The same as in any other instance. If you don't register as a credit provider in circumstances where you are required to have done so, the agreement will be null and void, leaving the credit provider with remedies that may ultimately prove unsatisfactory to recover the money in the event that the borrower defaults.
So the secret in that regard is not to charge interest or to, in fact, demand your pound of flesh, but in a different way to charging interest.
Interest-free loans will be exempt. The court has never had to address a situation whereby someone tries to charge their pound of flesh in a different way, as you put it, and it may well be found that in such an instance, that pound of flesh will constitute a charge that was granted in return for the deferment, and it will be considered to be a credit agreement. I suppose it will depend on the facts of each individual case.
So let's say, for example, an employer decides to pay for a bursary for an employee to study and says to that employee, I require you to work back for me a year for every year that I've paid. Would that be considered to be something which is exempt from this regulation or included in the regulation?
That's an open question until the judiciary has actually dealt with it and pronounced upon it. But just at first blush, it would seem to me to be something that is included in the regulation, because there's value being given in return for the deferment of the loan.
So practically, we're saying that that employer would need then to register as a credit provider under the National Credit Act before continuing to engage in funding bursaries and this kind of thing, at least from a risk management perspective.
Yes, that could be the possibility. That could be possible. I'm not saying that with any degree of confidence, because as I say, the court hasn't yet had to engage with such a situation. So we don't yet know whether that would fall under. I mean, the court might ultimately choose to read it restrictively and to exclude, for example, a bursary provision from the definition of value granted in return for the deferment of a loan.
Pierre Berger, Director at Worksmen's Attorneys, thank you so much for taking my call and being on Contemporary Business.
Thanks for having me, Ivor. Have a good day.
Bye-bye.